Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Thank you so much for joining us today. If this is your virgin voyage, allow me to share with you our mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedroom, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We feel there exists this cavernous gap separating the two orthodoxies, and that it's a gap comprised of many degreed thinking people who can argue quite passionately in shades of gray. And to that end, each and every show, we have fine guests to help best illustrate this point. Today is no exception. Also, if you wish to hook up with us on the web, it's www.alannathan.com. Don't forget that email address, alan@alannathan.com. That's A-L-A-N, coming at you live and strong each and every Monday through Friday at this time. Don't forget the classic Alan Nathan Show, Saturdays 6 to 7 p.m. and overnight Sunday mornings 3 to 4, all times Eastern. We are indeed a Main Street Radio Network production. Please check us out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Feel free to avail yourselves of our nascent but always robust Twitter and Facebook options that we have there for you. And of course, with great dispatch and alacrity, we love to thank our distributor, the Salem Radio Network. That's right, the Alan Nathan Show is entering its 23rd year of national syndication, all thanks to you, reaching about 800 towns and cities across a couple of hundred radio station broadcasts each week. Again, all thanks to you. And by the way, I don't care if you're part of the authoritarian left or perpetually clueless right. Please get out of the thought control business. Our topics du jour, as you may have heard, well, the critical race theory being taught in schools and government agencies across the U.S. teaches that whites are inherently racist and that quote-unquote color blindness is not an acceptable alternative to their tactics. But how can they credibly apply racism in the name of fighting racism? How can you be the embodiment of the very thing you're ostensibly against? Also, what should be done to disable the big tech monopolies? These folks are helping left-wing politicians in government violate our First Amendment rights by proxy, thanks to Section 230, a part of the Federal Communications Decency Act. More on this in just a bit, but right now I want to introduce old friend of the show, none other than Professor Alan Dershowitz, Harvard Law School professor, iconic lawyer. His latest book is the highly praised work entitled Case Against New Censorship. Again, Case Against the New Censorship, Protecting Free Speech from Big Tech, Progressives, and Universities. Dr. Dershowitz, good to have you back. How are you today?
Hey, it's great to be on a show that advertises itself as militantly moderate. I love that term. I am one of those.
I know you are, and I've come to see you as such. And I mean, I've had you on a number of times in the past, but yeah. I can't think of a time when your appearance is more dearly relevant than it is now, because you're somebody mm-hmm. who is universally respected as a progressive. You just don't believe that in order to maintain these beliefs that one needs to crap can the Constitution. You understand that there's a difference between, let's say, issues relevant to racial conflict versus issues relevant to conflict that just might transpire between people who are not of the same race. As I've said before on the show, in other words, a black guy and a white guy can argue over the same things that might transpire between two blacks, two whites, two Hispanics, two Asians, two Middle Easterners, for God's sakes. But for some reason in this country these days, the moment that disagreement occurs between people who are not of the same race, well then bingo bango, it must be a racial issue or an example of racism. How does your book address this particular malady among so many others?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I was at Martin Luther King's speech in August of 1963. I was a law clerk on the Supreme Court, and I heard him issue those famous words, I hope to live at a time when my children will be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And that's been my goal over the past 55 or 60 years. And in fact, I have a new book coming out in a couple of months called The Case for equality in a colorblind equality in an age of identity politics. And I take on exactly what you talked about in the introduction. In my book about the censorship, the new censors, what I've discovered, you know, I argued against censorship for many, many years. I had my first case in the Supreme Court in 1969, arguing on behalf of a film called I Am Curious Yellow. I had the Hare case. I had, you know, the Pentagon Papers case, all of those cases. And I won them all because we have a First Amendment that protects us against censorship by the government. But we don't have a provision that protects us against censorship from big tech, universities, and progressives. So I had to write my book to provide an alternative way of dealing with repression that today is more powerful than anything the government can do. When the government sets up censorship, we can go to court and beat them. But when Facebook sets up a Supreme Court consisting mostly of Trump haters, and they decide that they're going to continue to ban Trump for an additional 6 months, it's hard to take that case to court because they have their own First Amendment right. And that's why.
But you know what? Can I interpose for a second, Professor Dershowitz? I would normally acquiesce to that if it weren't for the fact that they, I believe, cannot credibly assert that they are a private company and therefore shouldn't be censored because they are enjoying very public government protection against libel suits. Normally, an outlet should be allowed to censor their own literature because they have to worry about protecting themselves against libel suits. But the government took that away from them as a concern. They no longer have to worry about libel suits, so therefore, by extension, I don't know that they're deserving of the same censorship options that might be afforded to others who are thoroughly legitimate private companies. Once you start getting government assistance, your claim to having absolute autonomy because of your private status, I believe, falls to the wayside, wanting of all credibility. Where am I mistaken?
You're not, and I have a whole section in the book about Section 230, and my proposal is that every media company be given a box to check. Are you simply a platform? You don't censor. So, no, you can't be sued if somebody goes on your platform and you have no control over him. But if you check the box saying you're a publisher and you do have the right to censor, you have the right to set up a Supreme Court like Facebook, you lose your two-section immunity. And I propose that in my book, and I think that's a good idea. I think that generally, Justice Thomas has written a very interesting opinion in which he says, look, these major mega companies, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, are different from the New York Times. They dominate the way people get news, and maybe they're common carriers, and maybe they can be controlled and can't discriminate in the same way that the Telegraph Company or the taxi cab companies can't discriminate. It's an interesting issue, and I address it in my book, and there's no good, perfect solution because you don't want the government regulating private companies. On the other hand, you don't want them to give private companies special exemptions in the law. So,
well, it's almost as if we figured out this. It's almost that they have this construct that allows big government to violate our First Amendment rights by proxy. I'm even looking at Section 230 itself, and it seems that the 230 points to this. It says, quote, no provider, i.e. big tech entity, okay, no provider or user of an interactive computer service, i.e. all of us, shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. Translation, apparently 230 says big tech cannot do what it's currently doing, even as only their preferred half of 230 gets applied. You know, they're getting protected from lawsuits.
Well,
I think these folks are endorsing a double standard. What's that, Doctor?
It would be unconstitutional for a statute to prohibit big tech from censoring. They have individual rights. They have their First Amendment rights. But it would be perfectly lawful to take away their Section 230 exemption. And that's, I think, the approach that Senator Ted Cruz is thinking about and other senators are thinking about, and I think that's going to come about. Now, with the Democratic majority in both houses, it may be a little slow in coming, but I think in the end we will see 230 amended and the platforms treated as what they really are. In many respects, they are publishers. Now, you know, you can also go to Rumble, which doesn't censor, and you can use that to compete against YouTube. I'll give you an example.
Sure.
So I was challenged to a debate by Bobby Kennedy, the son of the former attorney general, who is skeptic of vaccinations, and I'm more enthusiastic about vaccinations. We had a wonderful debate about the constitutionality, about the nature of science, about mistakes, and thousands of people watched it and loved it. Newt took it down. They said they didn't want to hear any, they didn't want anybody to hear Bobby Kennedy's side of the debate. They were perfectly happy to have my side of the debate presented. I didn't want to win that way. I wanted to win on the merits.
Exactly, because if arguments can't rise and fall on their merits, then they're serving nobody anything in a constructive fashion. And I think you bring this to light excellently. Actually, if you can, Professor, hang on the line for just a moment, folks. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network. Stick with us. Going to be right back.